Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If I could just remind you, please turn off your phones or turn down your phones. That would help, because there's always a little musical interlude at some point during the share. And whilst music is nice, it's not always the right time and the right place. It's good to see everybody here. A couple of prior announcements. First of all, I was asked to point out, and I think this is something definitely worth pointing out, that this week is actually the anniversary of the terrible massacres that happened in 1929, just around 90 years ago, in Hebron and in Tzfat and in Yerushalayim, where over 130 Jews were killed. And it's important to remember that, not to let that fade into history, and we should learn the Ilu Nishmatam, and also to recognize that that was a very important turning point in the history of the Yishuv, just historically, in the sense that that was the point at which the Jewish people here in the Yishuv realized that they couldn't rely on anybody, certainly not the British soldiers at the time, to protect them. And that mindset change was what led to the development of Tzahal eventually, and I think that's a very important point. So thank you for pointing that out, the person who asked me to announce that. There are people here who have relatives who were in the Hebron Yeshiva, who knew them, who were involved in that, so that's one thing we shouldn't forget. Also this week is Tu B'Av, and I'm not talking about Tu B'Av, very, very different kind of topic, but I wanted to speak about something which I've never spoken about before, which I found absolutely fascinating, which is as follows. This week is Parshat Va'etchanan. And of course, we do something in Shul that we do three times a year, which is we read the Aseret HaDibrot. We read the Ten Commandments. I'm going to use the expression the Ten Commandments, although you know and I know there aren't really Ten Commandments in the Ten Commandments. There are at least 13. But let's call them the Ten Commandments. There are the Aseret HaDibrot. And one of the interesting issues that comes up in Shuls all over the world is, do you stand? Do you sit? Do some people stand and some people sit? Does everybody argue? And different shuls have different minhagim. And I wanted to look at that, and generally the issue of the Aseret HaDibrot, which is absolutely fascinating. Probably no single other text has ever been so influential in the history of humankind as those 10 statements. So let's have a look at the sheet and see what we can glean from that. First of all, the important thing to realize is, by the way, I'm not going to speak about the Ten Commandments in terms of their content. That's an amazingly interesting topic in and of itself, and I'll point out that on Shavuos I was in London, and the chief rabbi, Rabbi Mervitz, gave an excellent shiur on the structure of the Aseret HaDibrot. I don't know if he has it online anywhere, but it was really wonderful. It was Yontov, so I assume nobody was taping it. But there is definitely a lot of material on that. I'm more interested in the slightly peripheral issues around the Ten Commandments, which I think don't get talked about so much. The first thing to realize is there's more going on here than perhaps people think. Look at number one. The Gemara Yerushalmi says, so the Amora that's quoting here says, Yafa limadni Chananya ben Achi Rebbe Yeshua. So how beautiful was what was taught limadani Chananya ben Achi Rebbe Yeshua, Chananya my nephew. And what did he say? Mahayamaze ben gal gadol legal gadol galim tfanim. Beautiful metaphor. Just like when you look at the waves coming in on the beach, there's a big wave and there's another big wave, but there are little waves in between the big waves. Kach ben kol dibu v'dibu dikdukeha v'otiyoteha shel Torah. Between each of these major statements, if you like, if you look carefully enough, you will find the tiny details that you didn't realize they were there. And there were many thinkers. Rav Sajigon is the most famous, I think, but before him was also Philo, who was a more Hellenistic Jewish philosophical thinker in the first century, who see within the Ten Commandments all of the 613 commandments. Assuming that there are 613 commandments, that's another question, which is not so straightforward, because there really aren't 613 mitzvot, but that's another share, which is not for now. But you can find more in the Aseret HaDibrot than just the Aseret HaDibrot, and therefore these are not just what they seem to be, but there's much more at stake here. And that's one of the reasons why reading the Aseret HaDibrot was meant to be part of our shul service, and yet is no longer. And that's something I want to talk about for a few moments. Have a look at number two. There's a Mishnah in Talmud, which is not often learnt. Amar lahem hamamuna. So the person in charge of the Beis HaMikdash, this is how the service went in the morning in the Beit HaMikdash. So think about it, the light is just breaking over the horizon, they've started things going, they've opened all the doors, they're getting ready for the Korban Tomid in the morning. So what do they do at that stage? He says to the people, Baruch Hu Bracha Achat. It's time, guys, to make one bracha. So hey, Baruch Hu, and they make the bracha. What bracha are they all saying in the Beis HaMikdash? So I brought you Rav Avadim Maratanura after that. Ahava Rabba. The bracha that we say in Shul, Ahava Rabba, that we say just before the Shema, which of course for us is the second bracha. Says the Bar Tanura, the Acha Shehir Hayom, Vazarcha Hachama, once the daylight had already got going and the sun was shining, Mavarachin Yotze Or, then they'd make Yotze Or, which we do first. But they would do that later. Vaseida Brocha Zayna Ma'akev, and it doesn't really matter which order you do these in. The first one they do is Ahava Rabba, everyone together in the Mikdash. Later they do Yotze Or. Then, Karu'u Aseret Hadibras, Advarim. They would read then out publicly the Ten Commandments. Then the Shema, Vayihi im Shmoa, Vayomer, which are the three paragraphs of the Shema, after the Aseret HaDibros. Then Baruch Hu Etzaam Shloisha Brochas. And then they made three new brochas. Which were they? Emet V'yatziv, which is the brocha we say after the Shema in the morning. V'avodah, that's the brocha which is in our Shmona Esrei, which is Ritzei. U'birkas Kayanim, and the brocha of Yivarecha Hashem V'yishmarecha, etc. The Baruch Hu points out that wasn't the way that they did it later when the Kohenim actually gave the brocha. That came only later, after the Korban. This was, they recited these brachas out, they said, let's say they said, Birkas Kohenim, to give a bracha, if you like, to the Kohenim, so that when they bring the Korban shortly afterwards, they'd be doing off the back of that bracha. Uba Shabbos, let's go to the fourth line, and on Shabbos, Moisifim bracha achas lemishma hayotze, on Shabbos they would give an extra bracha to the Kohenim who were leaving, because as you know, there was the changing of the guard. On Shabbat, the new mishmar came in, the old mishmar went out, and the nusach of that bracha you will recognize a little bit. He brought it here. Mishe shichen et shken et shmo v'bayit hazeh. He who gave his shechina, who brought his shechina into this house, hu yashkim beineichem. So you should be at peace with each other and have the shechina between each other. Ahava v'achava v'shalom v'reus, which of course you know from the Sheva brachas, but that's actually the bracha that they gave to the Kohenim, that they shouldn't all fall out with each other and be in broigers with each other between now and when they next came back, which if you know Kohenim and Levim, sometimes is easy to happen. So what I'm pointing out here is that they said the Aseret HaDibros every morning in the Mikdash. And says the Gemara Yerushalmi number 3, the Rav Masna and Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman Travaihon Amri, both of Rav Masna and Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman say, Bedin Haya, it should have been the case, Sheyeh Kairin Aseret HaDivorim B'chol Yom. They should read the Aseret HaDibros everywhere, every day. So why don't we read the Aseret HaDibros in Shul? Why isn't that part of the Shema? What should happen is, as part of the brachas, we should do what they did in the Mikdash. We should say, Yotze Or, Ahava Rabba, Aseret HaDibros, Shema, Emes V'yatziv, then Davin Shmona Esrei. Why do we do that? Mipnei Tanos Haminim. Because of the claims of the heretics, we'll see who they are in a minute, Shalayu Aimrim, that we don't want them to say, Eru Levadam Nitnu L'Moshe V'Sinai. Only these, only the Ten Commandments were given to us at Sinai, and the rest of the Torah, okay, that's on a different level, that was said sometime later by Moshe Rabbeinu, but that didn't come from God. People start, we'll see who these people are, started to say, these minim, that actually the Aseret HaDibros were the only thing that we got at Sinai. And in fact, there is evidence, we'll see soon, that they did used to recite the Ten Commandments. Not just that they thought they might, but they decided not to, but they used to, and they actually stopped. In fact, there are quite a few interesting archaeological finds. There's something called the Nash Papyrus. The Nash Papyrus was discovered in Egypt in 1898, which is a piece of what looks like what we would now call a siddur. It's just one papyrus, an extract from the prayer service of Egypt. We're talking a couple of hundred years BCE. And on that, they find the Aseret HaDibros and the Shema together, which is very interesting. Also, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, we found a number of scrolls there that have the Aseret HaDibros and the Shema together. Even with tefillin, there's an interesting discussion as to whether tefillin should or should not contain the Aseret HaDibros. There's the Gemara, which I didn't bring you on the sheet, but there's a Sifrei in Dvarim, which says that maybe tefillin should contain the Aseret HaDibros as well as the Shema. Why would you ever even think such a thing? The answer is because Vayu had Dvarim Ha'ele Asher Anuchi Mitzavcha Yom Al Avecha, which comes immediately before the mitzvah tefillin and mezuzah. What does that refer back to? Had Dvarim Ha'ele. So we say, well, it refers to the Shema. Well, only one pay rate prior to that is the Aseret HaDibros, and maybe it refers back to them. As I said, there have been a number of seven tefillin fragments found with the Dead Sea Scrolls that actually include the Shema as well. And there's even a Samaritan minhag to have the Aseret HaDibros as part of the mezuzah. And this is that's part of the mezuzah. And this obviously is all part of the same discussion that Chazal have, and they reject that as to whether the Aseret HaDibros should or should not be part of the service. If you look at Gemara in Brachas, in number 4 on page 2, you'll see this was a minhag that would not die down. Again, it quotes the Mishnah in Talmud. Fine. Says the Gemara in Brachas. Amar of Yehuda Amashmur. After Gvulim Bikshu Likrot came. They wanted, the communities in Chutz La'aretz, in outside the Mikdash certainly, maybe even Chutz La'aretz as well, wanted to read the Ten Commandments. But they said, no, you can't do that because of these heretics. We'll see soon who they are. They wanted to read this outside the Mikdash. Even in Babel, Rabba Bar Bachana, that he wanted to put them back. There was a rabbinic move to put the Ten Commandments back into the service in Babel. Amalei Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda replied, no, you can't do that. Kvav bitlum mipnei taromas aminim. We've got rid of that because of these heretics. Similarly, Amemar, a couple of hundred years later, Amemar tava lemikdeinu v'neridor, so he wanted to put them in to make a new part of the service in Neridor. Amalei Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi said, no. Kvar bitl mipnei taromas aminim. So you see, this is something that communities keep trying to reintroduce. Rav Haigon was faced with a question during the Gaonim by the people in Babel. Should we try this again? He said, no, you can't do this. We're not going to do this again. Look for a second in the Rashba, in number 7, we'll come back to 5 and 6. The Rashbam's asked the Rashba, in Spain in the 14th century, 13th, 14th. Shela Tamod, you asked also, he says, Mahu lana Aseret HaDibros b'shacha b'bet ha-kneset. Can we say the Aseret HaDibros in Shacharis? Because again, still in the 14th century, are people pushing this. Rui alasot kainim lo. Should we do this or not? His answer was, asur lasot. And then he tells us why. Who were these heretics that kept pushing at this and pushing at this? So look in Rashi. Look in Rashi number 5 and 6. Nipnei taromis aminim. Rashi number 5. Shalo yomru la'ame ha'aretz, because people would try and convince the more ignorant in the community, Eim Shah Torah Emet, the rest of the Torah is not really true. V'teidu, She'ein Karin, Ela Masha Oim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you can prove that, why? Because what do we read in Shacharis, they would say? We read the Ten Commandments. V'shamu Mikli Asinu, that we heard at Sinai. But the rest is not true, because we didn't hear it at Sinai. Who are these people? Rashi says in number 6, very unhelpfully, Akum. Oivdei Kochavim Muzalos. Non-Jews, but actually that Rashi is censored. And if you look at the original version of Rashi, which I put here in the at the end of number 6, the original before the censor came in was Talmidei Yeshu. Rashi is very clear who these people were. They are the early Christians, and that makes a lot of sense because, of course, Christianity has a very interesting relationship with what they call the Old Testament. Some bits they do keep, some bits they don't keep, and therefore that was classically something which they promoted. Not everybody agrees. There are other theories that they were Jewish Gnostics and the Samaritans, etc., that maybe they were part of it, but perhaps not. We'll never know for sure, but Rashi seems to say they were the early Christians. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Well, actually, the Shulchan Aruch brings the Aseret HaDibros back a little bit through the back door. Look at number 8. We don't say them in Shacharis, that we know, but the Shulchan Aruch says in number 8, quoting the Torah, Taiv Lomar Parshas Akedah. It's good to say certain things in shul in the morning. Parshas Akedah, I don't know, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because that would be embarrassing as to who says all these things, okay? Parshas Haman, Aseret HaDibros, Parshas Ha'oileh, the sacrifice, the oil sacrifice, Umincha, Ushlamim. And there are people who read these things, maybe not all of them. One of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, used to say, and I won't imitate his Irish brogue, he said, when people come late to shul in the morning, the first thing they sacrifice is the korbanos. And it's true that people don't usually say them, but you'll see in that list is Aseret HaDibros, or they'd made a reappearance, says the Ramah, the end of number 8, V'dafke v'yachid mutter. It's only allowed on your own, not communally. Loim Aseret HaDibros. V'chol yom, on a daily basis. Aval asur la'omram b'tzibur. You're not allowed to say them publicly. And the Mishnah Berurah writes in number 9, Mipnei ha'kaifrim, because we still have heretics around, he says, Shiyomru ein Torah elazo, who will say this is the only Torah, ubefrat bizmanenu, and he said it's worse now. It's no better now than it was. We'll see soon, not everyone entirely agrees with that. It's worse now, ulakach ein kosim oso gamkeim ala kuntras from Yuchel Lesibur. You shouldn't even have a pamphlet, he says, of the Ten Commandments floating around the shul. We'll talk about the top of the Aron Kodesh in a minute, okay? And Yesha comes with the light of the Limer Bitsiba Ella Lakoiva Oi Bain Habrochas. Maybe the only problem is to put it in the Shema in the morning. Kamo Kriya Shema. Aval Kaidim Baruch Sha'amar Musa Apatiba. Maybe you can read them publicly, even in the shul in public before the Psuki de Zimra. So Aron Nakinala also, but we don't even do that. Bitsibu Klal Uklal. And even if you're an individual, don't put them into tefillah. You can't put the Ten Commandments in. I've never been to a shul where they read out the Ten Commandments on a daily basis in public. Has anyone here ever been to such a shul? I don't think there are any minhagim that do this. But people, some people still say them. Rav Shlomo Luria, the Maharshal, writes that he had a personal minag, that he used to say them personally in the morning, and I know for sure, you'll find them in the Siddur, usually at the end of Shacharis. You know, when they put all sorts of prayer, what's sometimes called tefillah la'acha tefillah, or it's a strange statement, a prayer before the prayer, or a prayer after the prayer, whatever. But you'll find them in the Siddur there, and some people say them, some people don't. Now, what about standing for them? So go over to page number 3. This is a question that was asked specifically to the Rambam, and I want to look at his tshuva because it's very informative. The Rambam, of course, lived in North Africa in the 1100s, in the 12th century, early 13th century, and he says the following, number 10. B'damar ir, I was sent a question about a city. Shenhigu la chachameha umchobedeha, the honorable rabbis of the town and the good, the great and the good, they had a minag, they told them they had to sit, not stand, for the Aseret HaDibros. The Sefer Torah B'tzibur, when they read them from the Sefer Torah in public. Because this particular town, he says, before this new wave of rabbis, this Nebuch was a city without very much learning. And then one Rav came, Kivnein HaChochma, but he inserted Chochmah into this town, the Gadar Bakama Gadarot, and he made some new rules there. You know what it's like, a new rabbi comes to town, nothing's ever good enough, he has to start with new rules. And the minhag used to be, before this rav came, Shiyamdu Kulam Be'eit Kriyas HaDibros. They used to stand when the Ten Commandments were read, B'Sefer Torah B'Tzibur Misivat HaDibros, because of the Ten Commandments, they used to stand. Ubitel zeharav lezehaminak, and this rav said, "No, we have to stop doing that right now." Vinigla amle shev be'ez kriyasam uman amilavod, and he told them they're not allowed to stand. But amle bichlal shuvato, and this rabbi said, "Shekol mishe roitzel lakum, anyone who wants to get up and stand be'ez kriyas sefer Torah ve'asar dibros roilig orba, you have to criticize him and start." Sit down and, you know, whatever people do in shul and start clapping. You have to stop this. L'fishel ha'asad, so because if you want to do that, stand up. Humi derechei ha'aminim, ha'aminim shel ha'asad dibros ma'ala shel al shara Torah. These people who stand up are giving validity to the claim of the heretics that the Ten Commandments and only the Ten Commandments have a higher status. L'fishel shekol dava ha'ashel ha'aminim, bo'ma emuna shoneh midat rabbeinu. Anything where these heretics have a different approach to our classic rabbinic text, chayavim anu lehitzrachek bo mehem ulehavdil mehem. We have to separate from that. So that's what the town did. They used to stand, and then the rav said, now you have to sit. And they asked the Rambam, what should we do? Look what he says, tshuva. This is in the Rambam's tshuvas. Ze asher hinhig harav haniftar, what this deceased rav has introduced into the town, Leishev hu haraoi v'rayotav ra'ayot nechonot. This is correct, and his proofs are good proofs. And anywhere that people stand for the Ten Commandments, they should be told to stop. And they should be told to sit down. By the way, just out of interest, of the people here, who davens in a community where the usual minhag is to stand for the Ten Commandments? So that's a good 80% of the people here. Says the Rambam, I'm sorry, you're all doing the wrong thing. You have to tell your community to stop, according to the Rambam. Because this is going to cause people to lose emunah. Why? Because people are going to start to think, oh, the Torah has different levels. Some parts of the Torah are more important than other parts of the Torah. And this is very, very negative. You have to understand the Rambam has an agenda here. Because in the 13 Ikrim, which the Rambam wrote in his Perish on the Mishnah, in Perik Pelek, the 6th Ikr, is that, not the 6th Ikr, the 8th Ikr, excuse me, the 8th Ikr of Torah Min HaShamayim, the Rambam stresses again and again that the Torah doesn't have madrigot. The Torah doesn't have levels, and every pasuk in the Torah, whether it's Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, or it's the most obscure pasuk that you can find in the middle of nowhere, okay, they're all on the same level. And anyone who says that there are different levels, or that they any were written after Moshe Rabbeinu died, and of course that opens a whole Pandora's box, because does the Ibn Ezra agree, and do other people agree, etc. You have to say that every pasuk came from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, you should know that in the Ani Mamim, this is completely in parentheses, in the Ani Mamim that we read, which of course were not written by the Rambam, the Ani Mamim are one of almost 100 poems from the medieval period that picks up on the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim and turn them into poetry. Another one that we read in Shul is Yigdal, okay? None of these were written by the Rambam. The Rambam wrote in the Perish HaMishnah. But in the Ani Mamim, there are actually two different versions, whether you read the Ashkenazi version or the Sephardi version. And they make a big difference. For example, the Sephardi version says that every pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Torah was said to him by Hashem, and he didn't write any of his own volition. Okay? The Ashkenazi version says that every pasuk we have in our Sefer Torah today is exactly the same as the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Now, those two statements are very different statements. Okay? And one has to get into the kind of kishkas a little bit as to, well, which do we believe, and how does that work, and do we think our Sefer Torah today is 100% word perfect, and does that matter? Maybe it matters more if you're Ashkenazi than if you're Sephardi, maybe it doesn't. Even though the Ashkenazi and the Sephardi have the same text of the Sefer Torah, the Yemenites have a very, very slightly different one, but that's just a parenthetical issue. But the Rambam's very nervous about this. He doesn't want people coming along and saying there are two kinds of levels to the Sefer Torah. I remember Lahavdil, when I went to my school, I went to a non-Jewish school for many years, and the first thing they issued us with is a New English Bible. I'm not sure anyone here has the New English Bible on the shelves at home or would admit to it, and I don't know what happened to mine. I no longer have it for some reason. But the first thing I noticed about the New English Bible that they gave me is it came in two font sizes, meaning everything that they thought, which of course Christian Bible was important, was in large font. And everything which they thought was unimportant, which was most of Sefer Vayikra, okay, was in very, very small fonts. That's exactly what the Rambam says we're getting at here. You can't do this. You can't have the Torah in two different font sizes, although having said that, wait till the end of the year. I'll show you something interesting. So he says, it's really, really bad. We have to stop up all the breaches that are leading to this very negative emunah. We're on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lineup from the bottom. And the fact that there are other rabbis living in Baghdad, Umiksad Ha'arim and other places, Osoto, that they do stand for the authority of Bris, Ein Zer Raya B'Shum Panim, says the Rambam, don't bring me accounts from the rabbis of Baghdad. Which also, by the way, has its context here, because the Rambam had his run-ins with the Rabbonim in Bavel, as it were, who many of them still felt, even in the 12th century, that they were, if you like, the people in charge of the Jewish world. And the Rambam said, I've got news for you. Times have moved on. We now have our own communities. Bavel no longer rules the Gola. He says, I don't really care what the rabbis of Baghdad do. Why? Look what he says. Very Rambam-esque. If you say, Im nimsa anashim cholim, because if there are sick people in this world, lo nechlem habari, we don't make the well people sick So that everybody's the same. We don't take the sick, the well people, and make them sick just so that nobody feels different from each other. We make the sick people well. So if the rabbis of Baghdad stand up for Kriyas Haseret HaDibros, then they should sit down. We shouldn't stand up. Ve'ele ha'krayim, and these karites, enam ele asher korim otam ha'chachamim minim. Don't think I'm talking about the karites here. It's not the karites. Ele korim otam stukin u'baitusim. The karites they call other things. Stukin. Ve'lehoisi ha'kusim v'haminim, but I'm talking about the Samaritans, and probably the Christians here. Heim asher nitzpastu lahem ha'imunas, they have made the munah, they've lost down in the munah, the ikri ha-Torah, u'michrala ma'orim ein Torah min ha-shamayim, and these are the people who deny Torah is min ha-shamayim. The Karaites didn't deny that the written Torah was min ha-shamayim. Their problem was with the oral Torah. Here we're talking about people who have a problem with the written Torah. U'kvar biram she'ein, biru she'ein hefresh bein ha-machish Torah kula, it doesn't matter whether someone denies the whole Torah, or machish posek echad, or even one verse from the Torah, but oimen Moshe mipi atzma oimra, like I said to you before, Moshe wrote it himself, it's all the same. There are people who say in the Christians or whatever that there are only the Ten Commandments are from Shemayim. Who Shashara Torah Moshe mipi atzmo yamru, Moshe made up the rest. Chas v'shalom. Who lachein bitlu kriyasam b'chol yom. That's why they cancelled reading the Torah every day. Va'asur b'shum panim la'asot haTorah miktata mu'ula mu'uleh mimiktata. You cannot make the Torah some parts greater and some parts less. You may not stand for the Aseret HaDibros. Now, why do we all stand for the Aseret HaDibros? The Rambam is very clear. We'll get to that soon. The first thing you need to know is this tshuva of the Rambam was only discovered in the 20th century. So that most of the communities who follow the minhagim that they follow were not aware of this Rambam. And by now the minhagim are very entrenched, because obviously the Rambam Mishnah Torah in other places we've had from the beginning, but this was discovered relatively recently, and therefore you find that the Sephardi authorities over the centuries have actually been quite open about standing for a Aseret HaDibros. Book in number 11, this actually, there's a slight mistake, it says here Talmud Yerushalmi, this is actually from the Shailas and Tshuvas Dvar Shmuel, which is slightly less well known. Rav Shmuel Abu Hav in the 17th century in Italy, he's from the same family as the Abu Hav in Tzfat, but he's not from Tzfat, he's from Italy. Book in number 11, She'ein kan makom leminim liudot. Don't worry about the minim anymore. Kevan shekavanosai hu mufursemet ugluya lakol. Since if you stand up, he's talking about on Shavuot, if you stand up for the Ten Commandments, everybody knows why you're doing that. Latet libenu. We're trying to impress on ourselves the eight uba onasahi on that very special time. Sheyesh bahidur keilu hikbalnu mipnei ashchina b'mamad hagadol anora'ahu. Why do we stand for the Ten Commandments and on Shavuos? Because we're recreating Ma'amad Har Sinai. And there's a reason why Ma'amad Har Sinai is called Ma'amad Har Sinai. It's not called Yishuv Har Sinai or Yeshivat Har Sinai. It's called Ma'amad Har Sinai. Therefore, you have to stand up. And everybody knows why you're doing that. Lefikach kol mokm shenagu aminag. Any place that has this minag, you oichsim ma'asei avoseichem, avoseichem b'yadeyem, shekevanasam l'shem shamayim. Don't worry, he says. Keep doing it. If your family, if your shul stands for the Ten Commandments, keep doing it, because everybody's clear as to why you're doing it. And by the way, Rav Soloveitchik, I didn't put it on your sheet, but I sent the sheet to Rabbi Ziegler. He when he's in Chutz La'aretz, he asked me to send him the sheets. I sent him the sheet. He says, why didn't you bring Rav Soloveitchik's position on this? And I confess, I actually didn't know Rav Soloveitchik's position on this. He's obviously a Talmud and an expert on Rav Soloveitchik. And he sent me something from one of his books, which says the following. Rav Soloveitchik had the following observation. He had no problem with people standing for the Aseret HaDibros. Why? He says, because we read them with different ta'amim depending on the occasion. There are two types of ta'amim for the Aseret HaDibros. There's a ta'am tachton, which is the regular trop for reading the Torah, where we divide up the sukkim posik by posik. And there's the Tam Elyon, you'll see them both printed in the standard format, where we actually divide up the Aseret HaDibros commandment by commandment, or Dibra by Dibra. It's a different way of reading it. He says the tradition used to be that we use the Tam Elyon on Shavuos, and the Tam Tachton on Yisro and Ve'eschanan. And there are still some shuls that do that. Now, if you use the Tam Elyon, which is the Shavuot laning, it's clear that what you're doing is reproducing Ma'amad Har Sinai, and therefore no one has a problem like we saw here if you stand up. If, however, you use the Tam Tachton, which is the regular Kriyas HaTorah trop, and you stand up, that looks like you're giving special precedence to the Aseret HaDibros because this is a regular Torah reading. Since, says Rav Soloveitchik, everybody today uses the Talmud and Elyon all of the time, almost all shuls use it, listen out, this Shabbos, use the Talmud Elyon even on Yisra'el Vet Kanan, it's clear that it's now to do with Matan Torah, and therefore no one has a problem. Even the Rambam would agree. It's easy to say, of course, that the Rambam would agree. No one asked him, but Rav Soloveitchik says that even the Rambam would agree that today, when we use the Shavuot laning, if you like, it's not a problem. Look at the Ben Ish Chai in number 12. Sorry, the Chida, I beg your pardon. The Chida wrote a series of tshuvas called Tov Ayin, number 12. And nearer the Ma'acha Shenagu Ha'am came, since people have this minag, Lakum Kulam Ba'asar Sadibras, everybody stands up. Nearer Shechayavim Ha'kol La'amot. And he makes another point, which is, if everybody's standing, you better not sit down, because now you've got another problem. Ein L'shum Echad Lisha'er Yoshev. If they're standing, you can't sit. Even though I can't tell you that you have to stand, now that everybody else is standing, you certainly can't be the one to sit down. Because now it's the opposite problem. If everyone stands for the Ten Commandments and you dafka sit down, you look like you're making the Ten Commandments lower than all the rest of the Torah. The Chazal said in Maseches Derech Eretz, if everyone's standing, don't sit down. And people go criticized very strongly. You're sitting, you're at a chuppah. Do you stand for the Sheva Brochas? Or do you sit for the Sheva Brochas? The Kevan de Nagu la'amod, Zeshe Yoshev over alo Yeshev ben, Yolo Yoshev ben ha'omde. There are different minhagim of Sheva Brochas. I tend to find that nobody really knows exactly what to do. But I think that most people stand. In Chutz La'aretz, everybody stands, as far as I can recall. In England, anyway, people stand up whenever they... No, they don't stand in England. They sit in England. So you see, everyone does something different. Whatever they do, that's fine, as long as you do what everybody else does. I actually once went, my Shehaya, to a chuppah in Yerushalayim, and there was one Talmid Chacham, certainly holds himself as a Talmud Chacham, who was there, and everybody stood up as the Kala walked up through the aisle, and he turned round to me and said, this is a minag of the goyim, and I'm not standing up, and I'm sitting down, and the whole place was standing up, and he was sitting down, making his machor there, to sit down. He's probably right that it's a minag from church, but the point is, you can't sit down when everybody else stands up. That's not how it works, and he was wrong to do that. I thought that at the time, I just didn't have a source to bring him. Now I can send him the sheet, although I'm not sure he'll appreciate it. So the truth is, there are... yes?
I
just quoted it. Yeah. This comes from a Maseches Derech Eretz. Halacha Lemaisa. Go over to page 4. What do we do today? So it depends on who you ask. Rav Avadi Yosef says you should sit down. You shouldn't make any special rules for Aseret HaDibros. More than any other Kriyas HaTorah. We don't even want to give any kind of opening to the heretics to suggest anything. And since the Sfaradi minhag is to normally sit down during regular reading of the Sefer Torah, like the Shulchan Aruch rules, Ein roi la'amod b'shas Kriyas HaTorah. Fine, don't stand up. Rav Moshe, sorry. I don't know, I didn't read the whole tshuva. Nowadays, most people, I don't know what the Sfaradim do. Mr. Monhi could tell me, most Ashkenazi shuls read the Talmud Elyon all the time. Okay? In one shul, in one shtibel in Haranov, the person who laned there used to dafka lane the Talmud Tachton for Ves Chanan, but I think most people read the Talmud Elyon, which maybe is less problem. But Rav Avadia is not interested. He says, sit down, don't stand up. Rav Moshe Feinstein is more open to standing up. Number 15, Ulechein Nira de Ein L'shanu Min HaMinag. Just do what the minag is, he says. Even if you come from a place where that's not the minag, just don't cause machlokes, says Rav Moshe. That's the most important thing. And therefore, if you want to be a big frumer and not stand for the Aseret HaDibros, you better stand for the whole laning, It's not such a long parsha, Vayetzchanan, and Yitzchanan is a very short parsha. So if you don't want to stand for the whole thing, and then everyone's happy. And there are some people, by the way, that I've seen that they never normally stand, but for the parshas with the Aseret HaDibros, they do. Aval adarabah ledina asur l'shana b'minhag ha'tzibur. By the way, Rav Moshe says, since we also stand up for some other Kriyas HaTorah, like Shirat Hayam, that makes it a little bit easier, because people can see it's not just the Aseret HaDibros, people stand for other things as well. What's that? Do we? Yesh for yesh. Maybe some people do, some people don't. I think often they stand up so they can hear it properly, etc. Rav Eliashiv, I brought you some psakim here. Rav Eliashiv said, absolutely you cannot stand. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, his personal practice was not to stand, although I don't know if he said it was us. Rav Chaim David Halevi from Tel Aviv, he said he prefers you to sit, but again, do whatever the minhag is. And Rav Moshe Sternbuch, interestingly, says, no, it's fine, you can stand during the Aseret HaDibros, and Rav Soloveitchik I mentioned before. So Ad Kan on standing for the Aseret HaDibros. You'll see there's an interesting background in terms of whether we used to say it in Shacharis, didn't use to say it in Shacharis. Let's move on to two other fascinating issues. So we saw before that the Mishnah Berurah says you're not meant to have pamphlets of the Aseret HaDibros as a separate written book floating around, exactly for the reasons that we've been talking about. But everybody knows that the one thing you have on top of the Aron Kodesh is some kind of version of the Aseret HaDibros. The question is, what shape should they be? And this may seem like a minor matter, but there are some rabbis who get quite excited about this. So I just wanted to deal with it for 5 minutes. Are the luchos meant to be round, or are the luchos meant to be square? Now, people always used to tell me, well, it was Michelangelo, he made them round. That's not true. We'll see soon. It's way before Michelangelo. Look at number 17. What does the Torah say about the shape of the luchos? And the answer is, it's not clear. Ve'yitzen el Moshe kechalato ledaberito. When God finished speaking to Moshe, he gave him, what did he give him? Bahar Sinai. Shnei luchot ha'idut. The two luchot, the two panels. A luach just means a panel. Okay? The two stone panels, whatever, of the testimony, luchot even, tablets of stone, ktufim ve'etba elukim, written with the finger of God. And there is a debate about the second luchos, were they written by God, were they written by Moshe? I'm not getting into that now, we'll touch on that later. But for sure, the first luchot here it's talking about were given by God to Moshe, ve'etba elukim. These were placed in Aron Kodesh, and look at number 18. From Malachim, fast forward a few hundred years, in Malachim Aleph it says, Ein ba'aron, what was in the Aron Kodesh? Rak shnei luchos avanim, just the two tablets of stone, asher hinach sham Moshe, which Moshe had put there, b'chorev et chorev, asher karef Hashem in b'nei Yisrael, v'tzeitam me'eretz Mitzrayim. And by the way, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara, what does it mean that the only thing with the luchos wasn't the Sefer Torah also? In the Aron Kodesh that Moshe read, maybe that was inside, maybe that was outside. What about the Shivrei Luchos, the broken bits of the first? I'm not getting into all that now. You can look at the Daf and Bava Basra. But it sounds like the Luchos fitted snugly into the Aron Kodesh. So if you're looking at Bava Basra, number 19, Aron Sha'asa Moshe Amataim V'chetzi Arkova Ama V'chetzi Rachba V'ama V'chetzi Komato. This is taken from the Psukim. We know how big the Aron Kodesh was. It was 2.5 amas long, 1.5 amas wide, and 1.5 amas deep. What is an amma? This we're getting back to the shiur we had last time, right? How big is an amma? Well, as I told you, it's from here to here. So he said, ba'amma bat shisha tfachim. And we are assuming that there are 6 tfachim in an amma, which is not so straightforward, because there might be 5 in the mikdash, not going into that now. And therefore, he said, if you do the math, you'll work out how many tfachim the Aron Kodesh was as well. The haluchot, and the commandments, says the Gemara here, that the tablets, Arkan Shisha Varachban Shisha Va'avyan Shlosha. Oh. So now we're getting a feeling for what shape they were. 6 by 6 by 3. Okay? So each of the luchas was 6 by 6 tefachim. A tefach is this width here. And they were 3 thick, which is pretty thick actually. We'll get back to that in a minute. And Munachot Keneged Archo Shal Aron. They fitted snugly into the Aron. By the way, there's a Yerushalmi, I brought you a number 20 that says maybe they were 6 by 3 by 3, but either way, this is taken by many of the Mephoshim to mean they must have been square. Why? Because the Aron Kodesh was square, and they fitted snugly into the Aron, so they fitted in, they were obviously square. Is it so straightforward? Go over the page, please. You'll see in the Mishnah talks about another kind of luach, which is a little writing machberet. We have now machberot, but back in the day when they had no papers and pen, what did they used to do? You take to your lesson a little wax tablet, which has wax on both sides of the tablet, clicks together and folds, and you open it up. You do your lesson, whatever, you'd show it to the teacher, he'd be a good 10 out of 10, and then you'd rub all the wax dry, and then you'd start over again. If you're interested, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, this is called a diptych. D-I-P-T-Y-C-H. Am I pronouncing it right? Diptych? Diptych? Well, okay, you can go and do a PhD in some other time about the pronunciation of the diptych, but have a look in number 21. Hakotev shtei otiyot al shnei luchei pinkas. I know how to pronounce it in Hebrew. It's shnei luchei pinkas. Pinax? You mean there's an alternative reading of it? Pinax or pinkas? Pinax. Okay, well, we can have, certainly in the Mishnah it's written as Pinkas, but maybe there are other Gisaot, whatever. The fact is that was something that people called a Luach as well. And very interestingly, by the Middle Ages, this diptych thing that people were still using began to be rounded at the top. I brought you even two little pictures here of two examples from the Middle Ages of, you see the shape of this little diptych thing, and it was often square with a rounded top. And therefore, from the 11th century onwards, they began to draw the Ten Commandments, because they said, oh, these are luchot, and these are luchot, and these are round, so they must have been round. And even actually by the 13th century in England, the King of England, King Henry III, who made the Jews walk around with a badge, this was already many hundreds of years ago, the badge was the luchot, and it was rounded. So already by the 16th century, it was very hard to find anything but rounded luchot, and even in Jewish art, if you like, then there are, I brought you in the at the bottom of the page a reference to this. They seem to give rounded luchot. Now, if you're a Chabad rabbi, you're not very happy about this, because the Lubavitcher Rebbe was very insistent that it was not correct to have luchot with rounded tops. I remember my wife's Rav from England was at one point, the Rav of the Shul was a Chabad rabbi, and he was very unhappy on the top of the luchot, top of the Aron Kodesh, there was a rounded luchot, and Rav Moshe Sternbuch has a tshuva here. I brought you number 22, where he was asked a shaila. I assume he was in South Africa at the time. I think it says so when he was in South Africa. So there was a shul there with rounded luchot. And do they have to, I'll just read the tshuva, read the shaila at the beginning. In number 22. The Bet Knesset Echad, Talush Shnei luchot abrit al Aron Kodesh. They put these commandments up on the Aron Kodesh. Kano Barosha Mugal, and they were rounded, as is the normal minag these days. Veir er echad v'shem agedoyim v'tayvim shizeil chikuy anoitzrim. And someone came along and said, you can't do that, that's Christian. V'oid sheturasa mugalet neged chazal, and it's against chazal, and he brings the Gemara in Bava Basra, that he also reads to mean that the luchot was square. Fine. And it seems that it was the Christians, according to this questioner, that made them round. The loyasu came lifnim Yisrael, and that was never the case in the Jewish people. But Darshal Harid et Alukas, he wanted to schlep them off the Aron Kodesh, this kanoi in the congregation, me Aron HaKodesh. And he asked Rav Moshe, should I be demanding that these things are schlepped off the Aron Kodesh? And he wrote to him basically and said, don't get so excited, there are other things to get upset about in shuls, this is fine, we're not even sure if it was Christian or if it was Jewish, maybe it was Jewish that they were rounded as well, and he says just leave it as it is and make a fuss about something else. But at the last line he says, Umihu, I want to tell you though, Hacharidim nahagu ledakdek. The Charedish shuls, which presumably was not this fellow shul, are very careful at asot haluchot merubah, to make them square. Not rounded. And he says that the stipler also wrote that they should be, maybe the rabea duck. They have to be square. Now, again, I've not done a survey of shuls around Yerushalayim as to whether the luchos are round or square, but the bottom line here is that if you're a Chabadnik, you're probably going to have them square. If not, you may have them round, but you don't have to rip them off the Aron Kodesh. By the way, when the chief rabbi gave the shir that he gave on Shavuot, he said a very interesting story. He got a phone call from Clarence House when he became the chief rabbi. Clarence House is the official residence of Prince Charles and his wife Camilla. They asked him to pop around for tea, as, you know, the chief rabbi would, because they found some Hebrew writing in some of their furniture.
So he said, that sounds very interesting. So he went round to the to Clarence House and he had tea with the Prince Charles. And he said, what's the issue here? So Prince Charles said, oh, come this way, you know, and he brought him round. And in the back of the room there, he showed them the cupboard that he kept his crockery in, the royal crockery. And on the top of the cupboard of the royal crockery was the Ten Commandments. And says, Chief Rabbi, I realized that Prince Charles keeps his crockery in an Aron Kodesh. Someone's obviously donated at some stage in history this Aron Kodesh to the royal family, and this is now the official royal crockery cupboard. Okay? So there you are. I don't know if he sang by Ibn Sa'aron when they get out the cup, but there you are. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it could be. So the question is, you know, does the Aron Kodesh have Kedusha? Does it not have Kedusha? It's very hard to know where that Aron Kodesh came from. It could have come from anywhere. But that's just a Maisha Shehaya. Anyway, let's just do with the last thing. For many people, and that's why I brought you this little picture at the bottom, the go-to place for anything to do with the Ten Commandments is always going to be Cecil B. DeMille and the famous movie with Charlton Heston. And that's why I brought you a picture of Mr. Heston there carrying the Ten Commandments in the movie. Now, what's actually very interesting, you'll see from here, I'm not bringing any halakhic conclusions from Cecil B. DeMille, but the first thing you'll see is that the luchos are written in Ktav Ivri in the film, in the ancient Hebrew script. And actually, a little story that I have, I was actually in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, and I went to the Mann Theater, where they have a whole theater about the history of movies and things like that. And they have the original version of the Ten Commandments from the movie in a special bookcase, like a holy relic that they have there from the movie. These are actually the replacement version in case Charlton Heston dropped the other one, which, you know, that wasn't in the script for him to do that, but you never know if he's really doing it properly. They should go down, but they had the replacement one. So I went to see them, and she said, oh, you're a rabbi, maybe you'll find these interesting. I said, well, I doubt it, but let me have a look. And she's giving this talk, and she said, and of course, the writing on the luch, on these Ten Commandments, on the tablets, is just gobbledygook. Because someone said, what does it say? And I said to her, well, actually, that's not correct, because you might not recognize this as being Hebrew, but this is actually Ktav Ivri. She goes, you're joking, really? I said, yes, and you can see from the movie still there that it is Ktav Ivri. And if you can read Ktav Ivri, you'll be able to read very clearly on the right-hand side here, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Okay? They didn't put the whole thing on the luach because they couldn't fit it all on. We'll come to that in a minute. And you'll see, actually, they've only put four on one half and six on the other half, which we'll see is not any of the opinions. But if you can write it, at the top of the second luach on the left, you'll see it says, I don't know if you can read Ktav Ivri, I can read a little bit, it says, Kabein et avicha ve'et imecha. So they put that on. The question that I want to give to you, though, is that correct? Were the luchos written in, which font were they written in, and why does that matter? And here I want to open up a subject which we're going to deal with in a different shiur, but which I think you'll find very interesting. Look at number 23, please. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos said, Asar dvarim nivru be'erev Shabbat bein ha-shmashot. And here, I suppose, is your link with last week's shiur, that there are 10 things which were given to the Jewish people, Bein HaShemashot, or given to the world, rather, created, not to the Jewish people, on Bein HaShemashot at the end of the 6 days of creation, the Elohim. And these are they, and I've missed out most of them, but here are three, HaKtav, the HaMichtav, the HaLuchot. The Ktav, the writing, and the Michtav, what's Michtav, also writing, and the Luchot, and the tablets of stone. What are these things? Go over to page 6, please. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, Haktav, and this is where we get a little bit mystical, the Ktav is HaTorah Shehayta Ketuva Lifnei Hashem. This, the Ktav means the text, not the words, but the text that was originally before God, Misheshet Yimei Breshis, the Eish Shchora Al Gabi Eish Levana. Black fire upon white fire. Now, what exactly that's talking about, I'm not getting into now, but it's absolutely fascinating, this idea that there is a primordial Torah on some level, which is the Torah out of God's mind, the Torah that existed before creation. If you're interested in a really fascinating book on that, I brought you a couple of sources at the bottom, so a couple of shirim I have on that. Rabbi Cordoza, a very, very long time ago, wrote a book about the Torah as God's mind, which is a fascinating read. And getting into what that means, the black fire on the white fire, is a whole shir in and of itself. The Michtav, what is the Michtav, says at the end of number 24, Surat ha'otiot. This is the shape of the letters. Charut al haluchot, which is engraved onto the luchot. Now, what was the shape of those letters? So I want to just bring to your attention a Gemara in Sanhedrin number 25, which we're going to have a separate shiur on, because it needs to be dealt with. But look what it says here. Amar mar zutra v'item amar ukra. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, what was the original script of the Jewish people? So there are three opinions. It says, B'tchila nitna Torah li Yisrael b'ktav ivri. Originally, the Torah was given to the Jewish people in Ktav Ivri. Now, if you want to know what Ktav Ivri is, in 26, that's the Aleph Bet in Ktav Ivri. That's the ancient script, the Paleo-Canaanite script that was used by not just the Jewish people, but by lots of Semitic people all around the Middle East. We're going back 3,000 BCE, probably, and after that. That was originally the script of the Torah. And anything, by the way, that they dig up from the second temple, from the first temple period, is always in Ktav Ivri. The oldest pasuk in the Torah that they found, that they dug up in a grave just here by the Begin Center, was a little metal scroll on which was engraved, Yivarechcha Hashem v'yishmarecha, the Birkas Kohanim, which was, of course, in Ktav Ivri. That's from the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Really fascinating. So he says that was the original script. Chazra v'nitna lahem b'imei Ezra. Later, when Ezra came at the beginning of the second temple, v'ktav ashuris, it was changed. The script was changed from the ancient script to what you and I now call Hebrew, what we're reading now. Tani Rabbi Yosemo, this is also a brisa. Roy haya Ezra shetitnan, okay? Shetinaten, excuse me, Torah al yadol Yisrael. The Ezra should have really been the one to receive the Torah. He was worthy of receiving the Torah. Ilmale kadmo Moshe, if not for the fact that Moshe had come first. Okay, so that job has been taken. The Torah has been given to Moshe. The Asaf, he shall nit the Torah al yado. Even though the Torah wasn't given to Ezra, nishtane al yado haktav. He changed the script. Ezra brought in the script. We call it Ktav Ashuri. Why is it called Ktav Ashuri? Because it comes from Assyria. Okay, version number one. According to this, it sounds like what scripts were on the Luchos? It sounds like Cecil B. DeMille got it right. It's Ktav Ivri. Third or fourth line down in number 25. Another opinion. Tanya Rebbe, Omer Rebbe says, Rebbe Danasi, no. B'tchila b'ktav zen nitna Torah Yisrael. We originally got the Torah in the scripts we have now. Kevan shechatu, but when they sinned, maybe the golden calf, but I'm not getting into this detail now, nefach lehen l'royet, it was converted into the Ktav Ivri. And that's the script that we had to use. Kevan shechazru behem, once we did tshuva, hechziru lahem, we got the Ktav back. Okay? And the third opinion is, Reb Shimon ben Eleza, Alaza omer mishum Rebbe Eliezer ben Parata, she'ama mishum Rebbe Alaza hamoidai, Ktav ze lo nishtana kol ik. We never changed the Ktav. This has always been our Ktav, this has always been the script, it was given like this, and it never changed. Now, which of these is right, which of these is wrong, I'm not getting into now, but it's interesting, you will probably be familiar with the idea brought out from the Pasuk that the Luchos were where you could read the writing on both sides. You've heard that idea before. That's based on number 27. Vayif v'yered Moshe min ahar, Moshe comes down from the mountain, v'shnei Luchos ha'edus b'yado, carrying the tablets of stone, Luchos k'suvos v'shnei Ebrahim, k'suvos v'shnei Ebrahim. The Luchot were written on both sides. Mizeh, now, how do you write something with script that goes all the way through? Says the Gemara in number 28. Amar Rav Chisda, you can do that because you can have the letters hanging on and it can be hollow. But you've got a problem with some letters. What about letters which are round? How is the letter going to stay put if it's got nothing to hang on to? So says the Gemara, Mem v'samach shebeluchod v'neis hayondim. The Mem and the Samach were held up by a neis. Rashi explains how that works. Now, according to this, what was the script of the Luchos? Ktav Ivri or Ktav Ashuri? Ktav Ashuri, yeah, meaning I know what you're saying. Meaning the R script today. Because the Samach, if you look in number 26, a Samach for us looks, well, you can't see it there because it's not Ktav Ivri, but we know Ktav Ashuri rather, but a Samach is round. But a Samach in Ktav Ivri is completely, doesn't like that, look like that at all. A samach looks like a pole, it looks like a telegraph pole. Yeah? What is the letter which is round in Ksav Ivri? Iron. Which is not surprising, because the iron is based on the iron. So if you look in number 29, the parallel Gemara in the Yerushalmi is Amar Rebbe Levi, Manda Amar Leroyt Nitna B'Torah, according to the view that the Torah was given in Ksav Ivri, Ayin Masa Nitzim, it was the iron which was the nace. Umanda Amar Ashuri Nitna Torah, according to the view it was given in the today's script, Samach Masa. Interesting. So the Gemara is hedging its bets. Either like this, or like that, but it's not clear, we'll have another share at another stage as to the implications that has. If you've ever been to a shir or read anything Kabbalistic on the mystical meaning of the Hebrew alphabet, you will immediately be thinking, oh my goodness, because that only applies if the original Luchos were given in Ksav Ashuri. It doesn't work for Ksav Ivri, which looks completely different, but that's not a question for now. The last thing I want to mention to you on page 7 is something that was brought to my attention many years ago by Professor Aumann. Professor Aumann, who won the Nobel Prize a few years ago for economics, he gave a shiur once in for Darchei Noam, and he brought the following idea, which I'll mention in a second. First of all, how many dibros were on each luach? 5 and 5? Not so straightforward. Look at number 31. Nitnu aseres hadibros chamisha aluach zeh v'chamisha aluach zeh. So yeah, 5 on one side, 5 on the other side. Divri Rebbe Chanani ben Gamliel. Chachamim are in, but the majority opinion is asara aluach zeh v'asara aluach zeh. They were given in duplicate. Why would they be given in duplicate? In case one breaks, okay. One side for God, one side for us, as it were. Okay? The idea that you put out the treaty, you put the contract in duplicate, and one party gets one half, and one party gets another half. It's a brit, it's a covenant. Okay? And actually, in the modern, some of the modern commentators, Joshua Berman has a lot on this, there's a very significant similarity, in some ways, between the structure of how the Aseret HaDibros were given, and in the ancient world, what used to be the Hittite vassal treaties, where a superior king would make a treaty with a lower king, they would have these things written out in duplicate, and they would have a meal, and they would have a ceremony, and etc., etc. And in many ways, this was a very clear indication that God was telling the Jewish people, as he's giving them the Torah, you know what this means, you recognize this. This is me, the King of Kings, making a treaty with you, the Mamlechet Kohanim, the inferior kings, that we're going to have this treaty and move forward with this. Now, there's a lot more to say about this, because it brings into question biblical criticism and things, but that's just an interesting question. But let's go with the assumption that it's 5 and 5. By the way, the Gemara talks about maybe it's 20 and 20, 40 and 40, triplicate, quadruplicate. You know, if you're into bureaucracy, this will appeal to you. But Professor Aumann says, let's assume it's 5 and 5, which is the normal approach. The Mabit says a beautiful thing. The Mabit, which I brought you in 32, which I'm not going to read now, he was a Rav in Eretz Yisrael in the 16th century, a colleague of Rav Yosef Karo. He says, Chazal say that the writing on the Luchot covered the entire Luach. Why do I need to know that? Why do I care if the writing covered it? Madahava. It was what it was. He says, no, think about this. How many words are there in the first 5? The Bein Adam Lamakom sign. Hundreds. How many words are there on the second half? The Bein Adam Lachavero. Very few. Says, according to this Midrashic idea that the writing covered the whole Luach, the very first visual image that God wants to give the Jewish people of Torah is, there's the small print, and then there's the big print. The big print, and I brought you actually the thing that Rabbi Aumann made for the shir, the big print is, don't cheat, don't lie, don't steal, don't murder people, etc. That, without that, there is no Torah. The small print is all the other stuff that you need to do, a little bit like Hillel said when the Ger came to him and said, convert me while I'm standing on one leg. He said, Madalachsani lechavrich lo tavit. Don't do to other people what you wouldn't want them to do to you. He said to him, this is the whole Torah. The idich perushahu. The rest is commentary. Zil Gemara. Now go and learn the commentary. And this idea actually is very beautiful. That people often have a great, says the Mabit, a great urge to do all the Bein Adam Lamakom. But there's much more of a yesahara when it comes to Bein Adam Lachaveros. The first thing that Moshe is telling the people is, no. If you're not keeping the Bedan Rechaveros, you're not keeping the big print. Very nice idea, beautiful idea, which I wanted to bring you at the end there. Anyway, Akan on the Ten Commandments. Next time I want to stay with shul furniture a little bit, and get into the much more difficult subject of why do we need a mechitza in shul, and where does that come from? Okay? Next week, please God, we will continue with that.